This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. One of the great things about the last quarter century is that we talk much more openly about our mental health than ever before. Being honest about how we're really doing, and when we're struggling, we don't hide it as much anymore. But for a lot of people, the part of asking for help is still a challenge. According to BetterHelp's 2026 State of the Stigma report, they surveyed 2,000 Americans and found 85% of them believe getting support is a good idea, but 74% felt that society discourages people from doing so. That's something we can all pitch in to fix. Not only should we be encouraging our friends and family to seek help when they need it, but we should be celebrating with them when they do so. This is something I know I do in my personal life a lot, and I encourage as many of you to do it as you can. This is the best way to pull the stigma away from therapy, which drives more people to access it. With BetterHelp, you can be matched with quality therapists with care and reliability. BetterHelp does all the initial matching for you, so you can focus on your therapy goals. BetterHelp is one of the world's largest online therapy platforms, with over 30,000 therapists and having served over 6 million people globally. Don't let the stigma stand in the way of support. Start therapy with BetterHelp. Sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com. That's better, H-E-L-P.com.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
Today, we are going to be finishing up our coverage of the Titan Legions, well, for now, with a dive into the Machine Spirit, the Legions at War, and some of their history as part of the Imperium. And a little bit not Imperium? We'll get to it. For those who don't know how you don't, but just in case, the 40K Lorecast, weekly show on the lore of the Warhammer 40K universe, releasing every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern. Please follow and comment, because I like reading the comments, and all your follows make us seem more important than we really are in reality. So, thank you.
I'm important.
We are not. We are not strong. In the grand scheme of things, the level of importance.
That is also like a wild, obscure Star Trek reference in this episode. That was a race. We are strong. And then they just start getting their ass kicked. They go, we are not strong.
Yes. All right. Well, links in the show notes to lots of stuff, like our YouTube channel, where every now and then we do Q&As. I've moved away from the bi-monthly-ish because it's just a lie at this point. So we do Q&As on occasion. You also get a link to Brad's other channel, the Brad channel, especially what it's called, where he does a lot more coverage of competitive 40K. Really great.
Another, I also have a couple rants up there, too.
Those will happen.
We should talk about our Discord.
Yeah. Now, we should talk about the history of 40K, where people can learn about. So everyone who's playing the game now is like, this game doesn't seem fair. You are correct, but you have no idea how unfair it could be. So check out the history of 40K to learn how unfair it used to be. You can also, if you like my voice, check out my show Retro Recall, where I play old video games and discover if they were good or bad. Oftentimes, eh.
What's the hardest game you've played so far? Since you've had it out,
hardest game was Lion King. It's Lion King or Battletoads. Although I'm just getting into the FPSs. All right, fun story. It hasn't come out yet. It's out for probably a month from the time of recording. But I went in. We're doing Quake, so I went in and actually, you can still play Quake 1 online. Turns out, those people who are playing it are still playing it online, and they're still shit talking. I went into the server.
That makes me so happy.
It was so, like, I went, I'm like, oh God,
what's happened?
They're still there.
You're like, what's happened since you were 13 and talking shit? Nothing.
Nothing. They're waiting for me to relive that memory.
I'm assuming they're also exploding you too. 30 years.
Oh, it didn't go well. Some dude just flying through the sky, firing a rocket at me and calling me a bitch. It was fun. But you can also support us. You can support us two ways. You can go to our website and check out our merchandise. It's pretty nice, including the stickers. Or you can support us on Patreon. Patreon is something I actually really do like a lot. Something I feel very strongly about. I have friends who are musicians. I have friends who are artists.
Patreon is a great way to support them, especially thanks to Spotify and AI destroying those two industries. So you can go to Patreon and help them out. You can also go to Patreon and help us out. Our Patreon, $4.99, gets you this show and the History of 40K ad-free, or 307.75 Philippine pesos. Because today, we're going to Cebu, because I went there and I like it a lot. Cebu is actually technically a collection of almost 200 islands around one big island, but great place to go because it's located kind of in the center of the archipelago? We're going to archipelago.
Archipelago.
The archipelago that is the Philippines. And so when you go there, the scuba diving is really good. You get a lot of coral, a lot of stuff.
So clear,
fishing thing. Yeah, the dynamite fishing thing is a bit of a pain in the ass, but that's a side note for a different day. I had a great blast. I went there and I went to Sihior, which was really cool. Beaches are gorgeous. Local food's good. I really like the garlic rice for breakfast thing. That's just cool. Just delicious, by the way. And then lechon. Oh, lechon. For those who don't know, Cebu was where the first Spanish colony in the Philippines is. And anyone with a basic knowledge of history knows that's probably not a good thing. So we'll skip past that and get to the real reason you go there. Nature. They've got a great airport, so it's easy to get in and out of. And the main city is kind of a great little hub. Like for me, it was 20 hours to get there. So it was nice after 20 hours staying in a nice big like high-rise hotel, just getting used to everything and then setting off for the coastal stuff. Because that water, as Brad said, is amazing. It's full of life. You've got some nice wrecks you can dive, but shallow enough that it's not a stupid, dangerous one. Check out Cebu. Really good time. But as Brad tried to jump the shark into earlier, we also have a Discord.
It's what I do.
And a great place to interact with a bunch of people. Our Discord's grown. I think we're at 12,000 something strong now, which is incredible. Get in there. Hang out with some people, ask a bunch of questions, talk to Brad and I, talk to other people. More importantly, Brad and I are, you know, we're two of the 12,000. So, you know, the minority there.
One, two.
Talk to the other people. Talk to other people, get literature recommendations, get painting advice, get, you know, gameplay advice, or just screw around. It really is a great place. It's so much better than Reddit. And that was kind of the goal. And again, it's free because we don't charge for Discord because we're not. Anyway, for the Titans.
I want to throw in, want to start with this on this because we didn't talk about this last time. And I did a lot of looking over the names of the Titans and how they do it and stuff like that. And I didn't realize because I kind of thought they all were getting like three named serial killer names like Billy Joe Bob is a Titan, but they all the Titans, the big Titans, get two word high Gothic names, and because of their importance they full-on get like the roster of this is this registered. They basically retire their jersey when they're built, which I think is really wild.
Yeah, the Titan, the Emperor class Titans are special, and it's because it's what's interesting is I can't find how long it takes to build them.
I was looking at that too, because they all get named, all of the basically every Titan is considered christening of it. It's a big deal for when they have these done,
right? But yeah, I couldn't find anywhere. It just says takes a while. That's the best I got. But one thing I did want to talk about was the Machine Spirit. And we've talked about it before. I felt this is probably one of the best casts to really dive a bit more into the Machine Spirit, because GW does this great thing with the Machine Spirit that I really appreciate. They keep the Machine Spirit vague, not opaque, but vague. They leave kind of hints here and there about what it might be, but they never confirm anything. Love this.
I like it a lot because of the fact that also you get to look at old rules were actually better for the Machine Spirit. The Machine Spirit used to be able to fire at a different, which was a big deal because you couldn't fire at different targets on it. The Machine Spirit could fire at a different target at a different ballistic skill than the rest of the crew.
Yeah, it's like having Gretchen of Yorks. But the thing I like about this is, because one of my biggest pet peeves in everything is within sci-fi when they try to logic or science sci-fi.
Yeah, don't get me started.
Mitochlorians.
I'm a Star Wars fan.
You know where we're going.
This pisses me off.
all Star Wars fans. And when midichlorians were revealed, and I looked this up. Do you know what year midichlorians came out, Brad? May of 1999.
Yeah.
Tell me Star Wars didn't go down. The only upside since then was Rogue One and Mandalorian, but that's kind of been TBD to this point.
Andor,
there's season two coming out. But season two is coming out. The problem with Star Wars is I never will say a thing in Star Wars is good until they stop making more of them.
I'll give you
like the Rogue One is, yeah, Rogue One is great because they went, there's no Rogue Two.
Yeah.
So Rogue One, fantastic. We're good. You know, same with a lot of the video games. Knights of the Old Republic, fantastic because they only made two of them. They could have made a third and ruined the whole thing. You know, it's just, that's kind of their MO. But yeah. Anyway, the Machine Spirit GW listened and were smart, and they've kept it as this, like, it's an AI, but not totally an AI, with a very hard wink there. And the best way I can describe the Machine Spirit, in my opinion, is it's like they take a full-blown AI and then they give it lead poisoning.
I was just saying they poison it. It's not.
Yeah, but like lead poisoning. Well, it just drops the IQ. They take an AI and drop
it. It is a bigger deal because the Titans are so big, they need effectively a better AI. So the Machine Spirits in the Titans are significantly more than the Machine Spirit that's in a Land Raider.
Exactly. And so I think that in my opinion, just my opinion, what they needed to do was take this genius AI that they know would just take over and like, all right, I'm in charge now. And yeah, Men of Iron, that was easy. And we're like,
oh, also they probably they'd win pretty hard now because a bunch of people would worship them. So
yes. Oh, that's also that piece too. It would be a god, wouldn't it? And they just load it down because it does these giant machines. The AI has to go. It has to run these calculations. It has to adjust, even makes emergency repairs, and it has to be able to do all these things. But for some reason, the Machine Spirits cannot do any of that without a human interface. It's almost like it's always asking permission to do everything. Like I can run it.
I feel like I like the fact that I just opened that up so loud.
Yeah, it was super loud.
Look, man.
Jesus Christ. Will we do it into the microphone next time?
Dude, I did it so far. I did it at the maximum length of my arms.
All right, so a foot and a half.
Cool. I don't even know if it's that.
I was going to edit it out. Now I can't because it's actually too funny to edit it out. Continue.
So one of the things I like about these Machine Spirits is I like the fact that it was almost like scrap code in a lot of the smaller machinery. Mm-hmm. But in a Titan, they had to unleash it, or at least unleash it with some permissions on it. But Titan's just too massive and has too many systems going that they can't.
Yeah, and let's talk about that a little bit, because like there is no machine. There's a variation to this, because if you ask the ADMEC, there is a Machine Spirit in a LAS rifle.
In everything.
But
I'm saying, you got to remember that the Imperium does all of the rites to honor the Machine Spirit and all of the machinery. The funny thing is we'll eventually do, we did it about travel before, but eventually we're going to do an entire episode on what goes on in the largest of the ships in the Imperium, because those also have some crazy crap going on.
Yeah, you guys, you probably all saw it, when those of you who played Space Marine 2, you can see with where they're actually, they have the candles lit all around everything. It's like, isn't that just a computer? Just press Control Enter.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah.
And to be fair, if you don't light the candle, the Control Enter will not work.
Yeah. Well, so, I think they did a great job of it also in Rogue Trader, and the DLCs for it are fantastic because they have an entire life that's going on in the ship. People live, die, and generations are in that ship, but those also have monstrous machine spirits that are running these flying cities.
And that's the thing. What happens is that on my point was like on a LAS rifle is not really a machine spirit, but as it starts to get bigger and stuff that we see in the game, okay, Rhino does have a machine spirit, but it's just minimal. It helps the pilot be able to move.
It also starts fixing the vehicle. That machine spirit
does. It will to a point, but when you get up to Land Raider, Bane Blade, now it starts to really kick, and then you get to the Titans, and it's even bigger.
And they get really, when we have this, they're more self-aware and they're more, I don't know if they're even more self-aware. They're just a bigger, larger, vast, or maybe just more unchained because they have to be in charge of more stuff. So they tap into them more.
Exactly. And one of the things I like about this is they also seem to become more sentient as it gets bigger. And this could just be something, the way I kind of also see this is it might just be the more machinery that's inside something, the more machine spirit that gets combined. And so what happens is it's like the Geth, you know, that just becomes more of a consciousness. Yeah,
the more of you get more and more together.
And so they talk about this. So the night pilots are very aware of this. And the night pilots are known for actually struggling against it.
Well,
I
love that the night machine spirits get very, very territorial about their house honor and everything that goes along with that. If somebody wrongs them, like, you're going to have to fight that off pretty hard if you're not going to go kill everybody that talks shit.
Although randomly, an interesting thing is that actually supposedly intentional on the part of the Admech. There is rumor, and it's been written down rumor, not like, you know, I read this on Reddit rumor. It's in some of the novels, you know, just got to caveat that some of the machine spirits, the original machine spirits, they actually took Terran animals like dogs, you know, lions, that kind of thing, and actually used some of their instinct and added that into the machine spirit. And the idea around this is kind of cool. They wanted the knights and these big things to behave when they're injured like a wounded beast, to be actually more aggressive and fight back. And the idea is that way it'll fight through injury. It'll help the pilot fight through injury. But to Brad's point, it also has an issue of honor then became kind of a problem where you're not actually injured. You've just been dishonored. And now you become laser focused on getting that honor back. So it backfired a little bit. Now, when you get to a Warhound Titan, this gets to be insane because, you know, now we're talking not necessarily HAL 9000, but more like, I don't know, this is late 90s. We're doing Bishop Ash. Not Army of Darkness Ash, by the way. Alien Ash.
Alien Ash.
Yeah. But the idea is when a Titan, like when a Princept, probably the Moderati too, link into the machine spirit, it greets them by name. It's where like HAL 9000 does. Like, hello, David. Nice to see you today. But it's even despite its sentience there, it's still not advanced enough to do anything. So it's just this like hyper intelligent pet that sits there and goes, hey, Brad, what are we doing today? And you're like, we're going to go over there.
Same thing we're doing every day, Brad. Taking over the world.
Destroying the heretics. Sounds awesome. Let's do this. Because the machine spirit, I like it as a pet too, because I think of the machine spirit as just wanting to do the bidding of the Princep. Whatever you want, let's go do this. This is going to be awesome. But at the same time, the Princep has to also kind of soothe the machine spirit. Another story I like is that, you know, obviously they have to be transported between the worlds. And these can be very long journeys.
Hugely long.
And so they have to be secured because you can't disassemble a Titan. I mean, you can, but you really don't want to. Because imagine if you disassembled, it'd be kind of a funny invasion where you land and then you have to build a structure so you can then rebuild the Titan. And the enemy just saying to me, hey guys, hold on a second. Just hold on for like 1 week. We're going to build this thing and then we're going to come kick your ass. But there's just no shooting at us for one week while we build this thing to kick your ass.
Also, one of the sucky parts, one of the short stories talks about the fact that the AIs actually feel all of the time and they don't get it distorted by the warp. So regular humans are like, oh man, it feels like we've only been gone for weeks, but it's actually been years. The AI is like, I've been counting every minute down with it gone.
Yeah. And so, yeah, they sit there and they actually start like they're freaking out inside there. So the Princeps have to like stay close to the Titan and like work with a tech priest to calm it, get it out of its anxiety.
You have to ask yourself,
which, by the way,
how much of the rituals are actually doing something? They sound so silly because when you look down the start button for the Land Raider and all that, but you have to actually do the litanies before, how much of this is to calm? Does it work? Is it actually working to calm them down?
I just want to point out, and I know you're going to support me on this, on how much of a miss GW had here on not writing one story, not a single one, where the Titan is B.A. Baracus and they're trying to get it on a transport.
They keep having to drug it and go.
Drug it with some milk. I mean, how did they not do that one time? Just one time. I'm not getting on that airplane. It's okay. I understand, you know, grand blah, 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 whatever your name is. Would you like some of this delicious drink? And then he just wakes up. You did it again. Would have been great. It would have been great. And if you guys don't know what that reference is, screw you for being too young. yeah. All right. But let's now talk about the original Titan Legions and where they came from. So as we said last week, the Titan Legions started with three. As the Great Crusade continued, many human colonies were discovered. Some of those colonies, though, had developed their own independent worship of technology, which is kind of an implication that the cult of the Omnissiah might have its roots in the golden age of technology.
Because they're very, they were spread out through the galaxy. There was tons of these cults all over the place. So it had to be something of that nature.
Yeah, because the stupid emperor, you know, punched the stupid dragon in the face and put it on stupid Mars. Like, we know what happened here. We covered that last week. That story sucked. But as these Forge Worlds were discovered, they kind of joined the Imperium, but in reality, they joined the Mechanicum as Forge Worlds. So they're both part of the Imperium and this independent entity because of that. And some of these Forge Worlds possess technology and manufacturing capabilities to produce Titans of their own. It's not clear if these got already had Titans or if they just were then like, hey, here's how you build a Titan, and they built Titans. I can't find it. I could be wrong. Feel free to come into Discord and tell me which way that is. But it felt more like they would get there and they'd say, okay, you guys can produce Titans now. But then time becomes an issue. So either way, the ranks of the Titan Legions grew. Fun story, though, as they grew, so did the internal strife. Because Titan Legions don't like... I mean, to be fair, AdMech doesn't like AdMech. We're calling a spade here. AdMech does not like AdMech at all. They're very jealous people.
Yeah, they're always trying to find secrets and keep them.
Yes. And we touched this last week, but we'll dive in a bit more. Because the Legions of the Astartes and the Titan Houses are very similar in that they're independent of each other. So like the Legions of the Astartes, you know, they sit in this weird spot. The Astartes are under command of the Emperor and surrounded by the Imperial Army. The Titan Houses are under the command of the Mechanicum and surrounded by the force of the Mechanicum. The Legions of the Astartes were competitive with one another, but it was a good competition. Some of them didn't like each other, but even the ones who didn't like each other weren't trying to kill each other till, you know, later, totally kill each other. But initially it was just like, hey, I want to prove I'm the greatest warrior. There were a couple of conflicts, obviously, that came up, but it was mostly out of being the best warrior. And some of the conflicts would obviously come out of like, hey, well, that's not how we fight.
They did fight pretty hard at the end of the Age of Strife when they were trying to take back Mars from the nonsense that was going on there.
Yeah, but the difference, I'm talking about the Astartes. Yeah. I'm saying within the Space Marine Legions, like you did have some obviously.
No, I was just talking about the Titans. Titans were fighting.
Oh, yeah.
Way
the
earlier.
On the flip side, the Titans were just, the Mechanicum just has contempt for itself.
Yeah.
The houses, the Titan houses genuinely had contempt for the other Titan houses. They viewed each of them as being inferior to themselves, not deserving of any of the resources they're getting, and basically trying to convince the rest of the Mechanicum to just make them the only Titan Legion.
Yeah. Coming out of the Age of Strife, the taking back Mars was just a shit show. Because you had the remnants of the AI, you had whatever the hell half the population became, which they kind of leave that in.
They're also all cloning. I mean, it is, it's not, and half of them are robot people. It's not ideal.
Yeah. Mars was like a crazy place for a while.
But what I like about the Mechanicum is the Mechanicum then has this huge problem of all these Titan houses basically just want to kill each other. But making a Titan is not easy, and they have to not let them do that because it's an immediate Pyrrhic victory. It's like, okay, so there's two Titan houses fought. All the Titans are gone, except for those two Titans that are left. This isn't really ideal for us. So what the Mechanicum starts doing is basically just start cutting off supplies, because the way the Imperium functions looks like an idiocy, but it's actually clever because it looks like a bureaucratic nightmare, but it's genius. So what they'll do to stop rebellion is you'll have a planet that makes more than enough food to suffice the planet, and they'll make it so none of that food stays on the planet. All the food leaves the planet, and the food that they eat has come from another planet. And what this does is it makes it so in order for that planet to go into rebellion, you know, because they stop shipping food off planet. This is what happened in the Badab Wars when Huron stopped letting the supplies go. They knew there was a problem right away. They didn't do anything about it, but they knew there was a problem right away. So this is a very clever trick the Imperium has always had to kind of know when rebellion is fermenting.
And also, you need a wild amount of resources to make a Titan. So
exactly. So the Mechanicum starts doing this. The Mechanicum just basically goes, look, you guys can obviously make these things, but we're just not going to give you people because we have all the cloning, and we're going to stop having ships show up with supplies. So good luck building something with dirt. And this way, they stop shooting each other. So then it becomes more of a shadow war.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Until
I was going to say, I did what I did before Horus came to town. I was
Horus makes it less shadowy. Now, with that, before we get into this, I do want to talk about how the legions go to war, because when they do go to war, it's super cool. So the legion structure is a little bit different than everything else in the Imperium. First off, at the head of every legion is a tech priest, which, duh, they're a branch of the Mechanicum. So all their deployments, all their actions, they're determined by a magi of the Forge World they're attached to, who then reports back to and is beholden to the tech priests of Mars. Duh, obviously. But when they go to war, the Mechanicum function just like the Space Marines.
This is wild because, so you can tell them to do something, but they still have to just agree to do something. Now,
you can't.
You can ask them to do
well,
something. Well, you can basically pull out your contract and say on line B, slide 8, it says you're supposed to do this, but they still just have to agree to show up, or they can.
Yeah.
And a lot of times in the stories, they just won't, which I think is crazy.
They are. The Titan Legions operate as almost independents. You have to solicit them, for lack of a better phrase. The only people who can requisition a Titan, at least in modern 40K, are the Inquisition. And that's just because they are genuinely doing things in theory for the survival of the Imperium. A lot of debate about that. But in theory, it's for the survival of the Imperium. So they operate as this independent force on the battlefield. When the Titans fight, though, as a result of this, they fight in their own little groups, sort of, kind of. I have to say that because, like,
they fight maniples.
Writing. Yeah. Well, the issue is the writers may decide they fight solo.
True,
yeah,
that is true. I was just about to say there's like, multiple times. Well, Titans either show up in fives or one.
Yeah. So if we're playing the game Titanicus, there's a way they show up. If we're writing a Black Library novel, there's another way they'll show up. That's just kind of the truth of this when we talk about lore. But let's take the game Titanicus, or whatever the hell it's called. I got that wrong, I realized just now, but let's go down. So the first thing to do is, the Brad says, they're called maniples, which is Latin for handful. So they got this one right. Good job, guys. Handful, five. I like it. Good job, GW. You got your Latin right this time. Now, apparently, by the way, they also say it's a magic number, and then I went to look it up. It's not. So that's also weird. Well, it said it's like, oh, they operate in maniples because number five has special values. So I was like, oh, what's the number five mean? And I went looking it up, and I couldn't find it. Claude couldn't find it, and Gemini couldn't find it. So I'm out.
So here's one of my favorite things about Titan Legions showing up places, because depending on the story, it's a lot different. You can either set down a Titan and it goes in and has this epic fight. And sometimes you've had big chaos on Imperial Titan on Titan stuff. Mm-hmm. But the way that the Titan legions like to fight is they find somebody that broke their ankle and they beat them up in an alley, because the Titan legions like to show up with such overpowering firepower so that none of the Titans have any danger of getting hurt.
Oh, it's awful. So these maniples that show up basically come in. They are, by the way, they are set. There's a bunch of set ones, like 3 Warhounds and 2 Reavers, 1 Warbringer, 2 Warhounds, 2 Reavers, etc. And they have names: Mandatum, Ruptura, Canis, Arcus. There's all these different things. And to Brad's point, it's based on what the enemies are present. So basically, are we fighting an enemy that has no Titans? Cool. We're bringing, you know, beat stick punch down. Are we fighting an enemy that has some Titans? Cool. We're bringing all Warbringers, because we're going to make sure those Titans are gone immediately. Are there going to be Shadow Swords? We're bringing Warhounds to get around them on the side and shoot them from the side. Boom, boom, boom. They always plan ahead, to Brad's point, to never lose a Titan.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they do have a little bit of a problem, because they're this auxiliary force where they don't take orders from the Imperial military. Well, that goes both ways. So if they won't listen to the Imperial military, then the Imperial Guard aren't going to listen to them either. So they have an exposure,
yeah.
You know, as we all saw with AT-STs and the Ewoks.
Or some 47s flying around with some tow cables, you know.
Yeah, the AT-AT against a rope. Oh, deploy the harpoon. Why did that work?
Also, screw this. I'm going on a Brad rant. Titans, and in the 40K game right now, Knights should never just be Knights or Titans. There should be a crap ton of guys with heraldry, but specifically to keep shit from their legs. That's how they fight. That's how they go in lore. It's not just big guys and nothing.
I feel like I should be allowed to have a precision. I feel like when I play my orcs, I should have the right to hit a Titan in the ankle and make it fall over. I feel like it should. Especially as orcs, I should get that.
Because they legitimately have a crap ton of guys
Explain to me why my Gretchen shouldn't be able to trip a knight.
Because there's a whole bunch of guardsmen that are stopping that from happening.
No,
that's the whole point
of it. It would be lore accurate. Ten Gretchen
just chewing on the cables.
No, it's not that. No, they'll just bring a rope.
Ten Gretchen.
Exactly
ten,
what,
ten,
that, what
ten Gretchen in an overcoat.
Ten Gretchen would 100% trip a knight. I'm very confident in this.
We'll be right back after a quick break. In my professional life, one thing I know well is how challenging managing a global team can be. Just the act of creating one has been an extreme challenge over the years. Because one thing you learn quickly is the difficulty of hiring global talent and how unclear those costs can be. It looks simple at first, but then the fees start to stack up with compliance worries, contractors versus employees, and a host of other regulations. Pebble brings clarity with upfront, all-in hiring costs and enables you to hire the world. Pebble is an AI-powered human resource platform built for founders, HR leaders, and operators who are hiring and supporting teams around the world. Pebble helps you hire, pay, and manage talent in over 185 countries with fast onboarding that can be done in minutes. Instead of juggling separate tools for contracts, payroll, benefits, and compliance, Pebble brings everything together with built-in compliance and local expertise to support you. This is especially helpful if you're managing teams internationally or planning to grow. The fastest growing companies in the world use Pebble to stay organized and reduce risk. And founders use it to scale faster without feeling like they need to become HR compliance experts. Bottom line, it simplifies global people operation so you can spend more time growing the business and supporting your team. Pebble's new standard discounted pricing is only $399 per month per employee. That'll help you contain cost. Go to hipebble.ai to get a free estimate. That's hipebble.ai for a free estimate.
Have you been sitting on an idea for a while now? Have a concept for a business, but just have not pulled the trigger yet?
Welcome to us, and in this podcast about 2 years before we started with a bunch of, hey, we should start a podcast. And the good news is starting a business is easier than ever now, thanks to tools out there like Shopify. With Shopify, you get all the tools you need to start a business and make it successful. You get the experience of a global commerce platform representing 10% of all e-commerce business in the U.S. alone. You get built-in tools that'll help you grow between writing product descriptions, page headlines, even advice on photography. And all of this comes with 24/7 customer support to help you with your journey. Take your passion and get your side gig going. Speaking from experience, you won't regret it. Get started today with a free trial at shopify.com/lore. With Shopify, nothing stands between your ideas and a real business. So go make one. Start your free trial today at shopify.com/lore. Let's start your trial today at shopify.com/lore.
But anyway, the danger to a Titan is the princep itself, because the entire Titan is controlled by a single person. That person dies, it ceases to function. And the enemies who are former Imperium all know that. A lot of the Xenos know that. And so a void shield's powerful, but, you know, there's no Galen Erso who they're working against the Titan Legions, designing the exhaust ports into the Titans so you can fire a proton torpedo down. Although, was it proton torpedo? It's been a while since I watched it. It's been a while since I watched it. But smaller arms can physically get inside a void shield, is what I'm getting at. Melton mines can be deployed, or special forces. Some of these Titans are big. You actually can physically just climb them. This is things you can do, and then you just go murder the princep or deploy a poison, you know, something Brad loves, you know.
Just again, why there's a whole bunch of bros around this.
In this case, they do, and it's called the Securitari. It feels like, I'll be honest, that name felt phoned in. The Securitari.
Sure, but I like this at least. I would like this phoned on in. The game, though. When we play, you should have to have this. I don't know why I'm so crazy about this. It just bugs me. Because in all of the lore, there's so many infantry that their whole point is to stop this from happening.
I will say, in Horus Heresy, you kind of do. So if you want to bring a Titan in Horus Heresy, you can't bring just a Titan. You have to bring a Titan with an AdMech army, and you have to bring it with
the support staff,
a bunch of troops. Yeah. Exactly. So it is in Horus Heresy to play a Titan. It actually works. You can't bring a Reaver because the points still don't work, but at least they wrote the rules correctly for it. Side note.
Yes. Well,
let's talk about the Securitari. The Securitari are, to Brad's point, the infantry cohort that serves alongside the Titan. Which, and they're a lot more than like a regular troop. What I like about these guys is they are specially designed to fight with Titans. Because, fun story about Titans, they're rather disruptive to everything around them.
Yeah, they'll just kill people by the stepping or near them.
Well, just being present. So they produce deafening levels of sound, just moving. Let alone when their weapons fire, which, by the way, there are stories of when their weapons fire, the heat coming off of them can melt your flesh. So you have to be fully covered or else it will just, you die being present while their guns fire.
Void shields aren't exactly super exciting to be around, by the way.
Well, void shields are great for the thing on the inside of the void shield. You're on the outside of the void shield. Not ideal. So everything around them, because remember, enemies are shooting at the Titan. You are near the Titan. Bad. So in order to fight alongside them, you have to be specially equipped. And the Securitari are similar to the Skitari in that they are custom made. So talk a couple of cool things about them. First off, they are only equipped for light and heavy infantry. They have no weapons to handle armor or anything like that because they're standing next to a freaking Titan. You know, doesn't come up a lot. The Titan's got the plasma gun. We're good. You don't need me to take out the tank. They are also very melee focused because, again, anything at range, look up, there's a Titan. We're not really concerned about the ranged combat right now. The thing standing, you know, 20 meters above me. It's got that covered.
Well, I love the fact that they have two basic things that they're supposed to do. One, keep shit off us. Two, I love the fact that they're effectively the people on the battlefield that are stabbing people to make sure that they're dead. Yeah. They're in charge of picking up the remnants. Yeah.
Just in case anyone's pretending to be dead, they poke them with a very sharp stick.
Yeah. They're very fun. Also, I love that these are people. They're 85% robot. It's just, these guys are.
Oh, yeah. The Skitari look at them and go, Jesus, guys, really?
Ugh. Yeah. These all mechanical, because you can't be there without having wild augmentation.
One of their coolest things, though, is this thing called the Chiropteris field generator. So this thing's amazing. So it's a force field that it creates a mini force field around the bear. But if it's around other Chiroptis force field generators, it builds a network and actually expands its power exponentially. So a single Securitari with a force field would like barely stop a las rifle. But a squad of them could shrug off heavy bolters, and even larger squad can shrug off volcano lances, which works. We think about it, because there might be like 100 of these dudes standing beneath a Titan. So that's getting, you know, anti-Titan weapons fired at it. Well, that 100, that the way that this field generator would work will actually, when the munition hits the void generator and explodes off the Titan and then shatters down on top of them, their field generator then protects them from that. So it's this kind of really cool weapon that I'm glad they don't put in the game for AdMech, because I feel like that rule would get broken as shit real quick and I'd hate playing against it. Just calling it out. That would be
nightmarish. Also, this is another one of the people that are using all of the forbidden technology also. These guys, these guys have so many Age of Strife, Age of Technology weapons.
Oh, that field generator comes from.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just saying everything that they're using also. The Skitari get away with a lot of the rad ammunition and all that kind of stuff, but these guys have 100% stuff that you're not supposed to have. It's so funny.
Yeah. But again, all these guys really do is they just basically go and look for, did anyone set a trap? Cool. Stab them.
Yeah.
And then let the Titans keep walking.
Is there infantry in the way also? Again, stab them.
Yeah. They also will work too when the enemy scatters. So when the Titan works, starts blowing stuff up and the infantry starts running everywhere, their job is to go hunt and kill all them down because the Titans' guns are too big. So it's like, all right, we'll get them. Don't worry about it. The other one too that they do is they also will forward deploy. So before the Titan kind of arrives from orbit, the Securitari will go and actually secure the landing zone. That's when the Titan is most at risk, is when it's being brought down from orbit. Because just screw it, shoot the landing craft.
Yeah, I mean, they're basically also forming Voltron at the time too.
Yeah.
I love that they take a while. They basically bolt on weapons and shit. All the auxiliary weapons get put on as they're going to war.
Yeah, and the thing too is about them is also they take a while to power up. And so the void shields won't be active when it's in a ship. So it has to land, be deployed. Sometimes a lot of them will do the weapons inside the ship because they actually have the lifts inside the ship to do it. But the problem is once it comes out of the ship, you have to power the whole thing on so that all the void shields have to cycle. It's massively exposed at that moment. So their job is to basically make sure nothing touches it. So yeah, with the Securitari, the Titan Legions can now operate as an independent body at war. And there is one more piece, though, to them. If the battle gets big enough, the Titan Legions will reach out to one more friend, and that is the Night Houses. They still won't reach out to the Imperium. They'll just reach out to you, because why bother? They will call the Night Houses. And this is usually when the Warhounds are too slow. It's most common is when they're invading somewhere that has stuff like basically knights, which are a knight is not a match for a Titan, but a group of knights are. A group of knights can pull down because they are small and they are compared to a
they're also fast.
Lightning fast. Yeah, especially lightning fast.
Especially some of the chassis are wild fast.
And some of them, the melee knights, for example, really good at stabbing that ankle. What's the Forge World one that I always see in tournaments? Whatever, that stupid thing, Lancer.
Lancer.
Yeah, that thing could poke some ankles.
It's got a shield, baby.
Yeah, that's going to poke some ankles. So what they'll do is they will actually bring Imperial Knights with them, or Chaos Knights too, you know, in the case of the other side, to add extra protection when the Securitari aren't quite big enough and the Warhounds are too big. So one more piece I kind of want to shove in here is, I don't know where to shove this.
I love that you should shove in here. Yeah, let's just jam this in.
I had to jam this in. There's nowhere to put it. I need to talk real quick about the divisions within the Titan Legion. So we just spent a bunch of time there talking about what is technically the Divisio Militaris. That's the fighting part of, you know, the Titan Legions. But there are three other divisions that make up the Titan Legions. So that one we've covered, Militaris. Duh. We know what that does. Then there's the Divisio Mandati.
Okay, I'm going to throw this out there because this is the one in stories and reading and stuff. And I don't know, maybe because they do it different in some of the novels. It feels like this is just the Imperial Navy, but not. It's
so
odd.
This one changes. So the Divisio Mandati there's pre-heresy, post-heresy Mandati. So pre-heresy, the Mandati's job has always been to move the Titans around. Pre-heresy, they were the Imperial Navy. They would actually move. They were the ships. They would move the Titans around all over the place. Post-heresy, the Mandati became the people buying the tickets for them. They basically became the travel agents.
Yeah, it just, I said in the reading, it just didn't make as much sense to me because I've read a lot of the novels where the Imperial Navy just picks up Titans and they just go.
You're reading later. So that is post-heresy. Pre-heresy, the Mandati, so pre-heresy, they would actually run their own navies. And there was the same thing. So everyone, it's the same thing. It used to be, it was the Imperial Guard and the Imperial Navy were one. It was just the Imperial military. And then post-heresy, they split them. So the Guard has the bum a ride.
Right.
And that way they get secured. They realized that letting the Titans drive themselves around the galaxy kind of sucked for a bunch of planets because Horus's Titans kept showing up on planets going, hey, how'd you guys like to join Horus? No?
Let's
check this out. Yeah. Check out what happens next. So post-heresy, the Mandati are basically saying, hey, can you give our Titan a ride, please? So they became kind of not useless, but they're more just a administrative thing post-heresy.
That's where I was confused about, just because getting ready for this and just like the different novels and stuff like that, they just talk about just grabbing these guys and going, you know, like they write that these still exist, but it felt like they kind of didn't. I felt like it was, what's his face, that you took a stapler. He didn't really have a job.
Yeah, we fixed the glitch. Exactly. The next one is the crazy one, the Divisio Telepathica, who have an origin that's completely shrouded in mystery. They're only mentioned in a couple short stories, and I'm not even all that sure if GW is that committed to them. But the idea of these is terrifying. Hey, let's jam a Psyker in a Titan and see what happens.
Yeah.
Oh, we're also going to shove a bunch of Dark Age of Technology tech in that thing so it shoots psychic weapons out.
Force weapons, basically.
Yeah, but by the way, that's different than a Psy Cannon. I went and looked this up. Psy Cannons shoot bullets that are infused with anti-Psyker bullets.
They have runes on them.
No. This is full-blown force weapons. So this is basically firing smite out of a gun. These things are unpleasant.
Fair and balanced.
Yeah, they're incredibly secretive. We're not even sure if they still exist. They did. They were around in the heresy. There's some questions if they're still around. The Grey Knights totally still have them. They're 100% still around. Who am I kidding? And the Inquisition would love these things. But then we get to my personal favorite, the Divisio Investigatus.
Which, by the way, it makes no sense. Their name makes no sense for what they do.
I don't care. They're my favorite thing. I love them.
Their name makes no sense.
Oh, their name is stupid. And I love them for absolutely no actual lore reason, but because of my own headcanon. This is only because in the lore, every time the Mechanicum try to play with big stuff, it always goes badly. Every single time.
These guys are Dragonlance gnomes just blowing shit up.
That's all that they do. Exactly. These guys, their job is to make new experimental weapons for Emperor class titans. And I can tell you with certainty, there are entire worlds that no longer exist because of these guys.
Don't cross the streams.
Because I guarantee you, they don't send wire gauge and amperage. That's just one of the, they are, I think they are the most feared part of the Collegia Titanica, but in a sense of, we just don't want them anywhere near us. They're on a planet, and anyone who knows what they are, just leave said planet. The Inquisition makes sure no one from the Inquisition is on a planet that they're on, because they don't want to lose them. But if the Inquisition doesn't like someone, they will send them to a planet that these guys are on.
Because they're mad scientists with fusion reactors.
No, they're mad scientists, but they're the bad kind who always get it wrong. I can't think of the cartoon, but there is a cartoon that's just going to exist.
These are Dragonlance gnomes.
It's just absolutely fantastic. They can't get anything right. All right. But with that, let's do kind of a quick history of the Titan Legions and Imperial history. So after the Emperor unifies Terra, his first stop is Mars. As we'd established, he'd been there 15 or so thousand years before the ancestors, the current people on Mars, had gotten there. And thanks to his psychic powers, basically knew everything that was going on up there the whole time. So he goes up there, projects himself as the machine god, and making a bunch of equipment on Mars react to his presence, which when I read it, it made me think of like turn of the century magician, like, you know, parlor trick. That's all I see it as.
Yeah, Bert came up, most powerful psyker in the galaxy, and he did 4 card tricks.
Yeah. Is this your card? Oh my God, how did he do that? It's not what he did.
The one true God.
That is just 1,000% how I see it. Just him doing, he pulled a rabbit out of a hat and blew everyone's mind. Although the story is Kelbor Hall did see through it. Kelbor Hall was like, yeah, that he kicked the machine and it flickered. Who gives a
shit? He Fonzied it.
That was his thing. Yeah, it's like, what the hell? But no matter what, the Treaty of Olympus is signed and the Mechanicum joins the Imperium, and with them came the Titans, and the Emperor goes out into the galaxy. This time is arguably one of the most powerful forces in the galaxy since the War in Heaven, because the Eldar, once again, were never that numerous. They didn't need to be. There weren't that they, because the Eldar snuffed things before they were a problem. The Eldar never really were that big. Comparatively. So you're talking about 20 legions of 100,000 plus space marines, 3 Titan legions that start growing as they find more worlds, trillions of soldiers riding in spaceships, ton of them too. And then as they're going out, they keep finding worlds that are amenable to their causes. And so a lot of times, like in the case of the 13th Legion, especially, they would leave planets with more than they entered the planet with. So this is a astronomically large fighting force. And the Titan Legion start benefiting massively. Those first 3 legions, Tempestus, Mortis, and Ignatum, that we started with, start growing massively. We get Legio Audax, who are made up of only Scout Titans for some weird reason. Legio Volpa, who are close quarters
this
fighting.
This is also a big deal, because when we start reclaiming the worlds, I do still love the fact that I, after all this time, always still say we with the Imperium. Yeah. I'm definitely part of the Imperium. We're reclaiming Forge worlds that have been gone for thousands of years. And this exponentially increases our ability to continue this fight. That's why the Crusade was so successful, as we were getting more and more stuff.
Yeah, because exactly. They're going to planets who were like, yeah, we'll join your cause. And by the way, we've got more weapons than you had.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah, this is fun stuff. STCs, yay. But yeah, so these new legions, so Legio Volpa, which, all right, that one does annoy me because they were known for close quarters fighting with a Titan.
No, just now.
No, exactly, yeah. Legio Ataris, who were technically traitors that then became loyalists because they were traitors against Kelbor Hall. And then he became a traitor. So they became loyalists. Cool story. Fun story. You guys should read him. Legio Furians. Yeah. Who went chaos before going chaos was cool.
Yeah. That's the best also, way to describe them. This is another one of the guys where I love the original story because they were apparently putting wild chaos arcane markings on them before, like just in the open, by the way, just like
before Lorgar was doing
it. Yeah. Like, you're just like, hey guys, how's it going? You're like, I feel that looks creepy as shit. Like nothing bad's going on here, guys. Absolutely. Yeah, we're just,
you guys don't carve things into the skulls of your servitors. Yeah. Is that because you're dorks?
Nerds.
But as a great crusade goes on, this kind of buddy system starts to develop. So different parts of the imperial military machine kind of finds that they get along better with other parts. And we see this with Astartes chapters, starting with some of the Primarchs, Horus and Sanguinius, Fulgrim and Ferris, Magnus and some guy named Khan. I can't find any references to him recently. There was a guy named Khan at one point. It's Jagatai, White, Scars. I looked him up. There's nothing recent. But anyway.
I actually did get sent you like this. I haven't told you this one. I want people to know this. I got sent because we were making fun. And one of my buddies sent me just Jagatai Khan and just sent little clips of Speed Racer. It was just like, that's what he's doing. He's just in the Dark City.
But even on the Legion side, Space Wolves and Dark Angels, obviously there's a competition, but it actually was a positive competition. And they did like each other. Luna Wolves, Emperor's Children, loved fighting with each other. Night Lords and Death Guard actually were the only ones who, liked the Night Lords, which tracks. It tracks, sadly. But the same came true with the Titan Legions. As the Crusade continued, certain Titan Legions found themselves more aligned with certain Astartes. This becomes a bigger problem post-Ulanor, though. So the Emperor hands the reins to Horus, and the Titan Legions look to the new War Master. And Horus, before any problems,
he's been
loved himself some Titan Legions.
Yeah, he was maintaining a great relationship with all of the Titan Legions.
Yeah.
And also, why wouldn't you? And you go, hey, you know what would be awesome? If I could just blow up anything I want.
Yeah, and I want to make it clear, he wasn't doing this with any ill intention. He was just a strategic, I was about to say he's a strategic genius. You're not a strategic genius. When you go, hey, what's the God machine do? Kind of blows everything up. I'm going to go make sure they like me.
I do.
Strategic genius.
This is off the thing, but what made us think of Horus Heresy. Small aside, one of my favorite comments in the last couple of weeks in Discord was still, why did they have to get past Pluto when they were invading?
Yeah.
It's so far away, you could just miss it.
The Mournival point is why I explained it. Yes. But yeah.
I know, but it was just so funny. I would read it.
It is.
He was impassioned about it, too. Like.
But so Horus made a real point of treating the Titan Legions very well, rewarding them with technology, keeping their casualties very low, making sure he never sent them into an engagement that they could actually basically have significant losses in, and all this stuff. What made at the same time for the Imperium is the Legio Mortis, who we talked about last week. The Legio Mortis are extremely loyal to the Fabricator of Mars. To a fault, they viewed the Mechanicum as independent of the Imperium. Their viewpoint was the Treaty of Olympus made them allies,
not servants.
Not servants, exactly. And so they weren't alone in this belief amongst Titan Legions. And the issue for the Imperium is the Legio Mortis's forge world was on Mars. So when the Horus Heresy began, they were ground zero. And side note, they didn't like the other two legions who were on Mars. So this is a recipe for bad. So to this end, the events of Davin, Horus knows what to do with the Mechanicum. He reached out to Kelbor Hall, and Kelbor agrees to back Horus in secret. Kelbor then goes to Legio Mortis and gets them on his side, which was not hard because they were already on his side. he gives them access to the War Master Titans that no one knows exist.
I still think it's so hilarious. You're like, how? These are so big, dude. You could accidentally know about this secret.
I don't write this crap. Like, don't look at me. Somehow they hid a bunch of giant robots. Anyway, so on Mars, Kelbor does have to work really fast because he has a big problem. Terra's pretty close. So any semblance of a protracted conflict, he auto loses because the forces of the Imperium just immediately deploy there and wreck his little rebellion. So he has to get total control of the planet and its defenses. So the Legio Mortis come into play. The Legio Mortis fire out very quickly with a brutal surprise attack on the Legio Tempestus, who were both unprepared for an attack and unprepared for what was attacking them, because they just got wrecked by these War Masters.
Well, they're using Titan killers against Titans. So
yeah, it's so bad that the Legio Tempestus actually split. Some of them join the traitors and come over to their side, but there are a few who do survive and post heresy bring the Legion back a little bit who survive. But with the Titans and the regular Skitarii, Kelbor Hall secures Mars before Terra can intervene and why Dorn can't do it. But this is just the tip of the iceberg of the Titans and the heresy. Because now out in Istvan, there's other Titan legions have joined. So if you've read the books, which I assume some of you have, if you hadn't, you can read them, they're good. The loyalist half of the traitor legions are deployed in Istvan 3 on the surface to fight this like fake foe. And they had a support element of the Legio Mortis, the Legio Audax, and the Legio Vulpa Titans. This is because their void shields would make them immune to the Life Eater virus. So as the world gets bombarded from orbit with this Life Eater virus and catches fire and everything's burning up, the Titans are just kind of hanging out and they begin gunning down any of the surviving Astartes. It's kind of the cool scene in the book, by the way. Then on Istvan 5, there's even more Titans playing this role, bringing again God Engine level destruction down. So the Imperium is aware it's not just Horus that's turned on them, but also the Mechanicum. However, the Mechanicum's nature, it creates a bit of an issue here. As we were saying earlier in this cast and the last cast, the Mechanicum is kind of made up of a bunch of independent parts. Not all of the houses, or I guess not all of the Forge Worlds, declare with Mars. Quite a few stay with the Imperium. So, because a lot of them do think the Emperor is the Omnissiah. And this sets up a whole bunch of cool novels that you should all go read. But what I want to talk about here is kind of an interesting little problem that pops up as we move through the heresy. Dorn notices something. Dorn's got a problem. And the problem he's got is that if Horus gets to Terra
with God Engines, well, their whole point is to break defenses.
Well, he knows what Horus would do. If Horus is smart, Horus will hold back his Titans until he gets to Terra, and he will deploy them on Terra. Dorn can defend Terra from Titans. He knows how to do it. But the collateral will be insane because it's just going to be basically engines firing against shields and then him firing who knows what back at them.
I love what he throws out because it's an obvious, like, you shouldn't do this. So Dorn just goes effectively, hey, man, you know what would be super cool? If we had a giant robot fight, what do you think? Yeah. No reason to go there, by the way.
Oh, there's total reason to go there. I am a huge fan of Godzilla and so are the writers of GW.
Yes.
That's all this is.
This is 100% hey, man, you want to see giant robots fight? How about a ton of them in one spot in a Royal Rumble, basically, which is what we're doing.
This entire story makes kind of no sense when you think about it, but it's also super awesome. So we're going to cover it real quick. Beta Garmon is a system that sits within Segmentum Solar, and it holds one of the most stable warp routes out of the Sol system. So this is astronomically strategically important. During the heresy, it had stayed loyal, but then fell into civil war, Alpha Legion. It was Alpha Legion.
It was Alpha Legion.
And then gets invaded by Emperor's children. Dorn then sends what's left of the Salamanders and a whole bunch of Titans there to retake it. And it's a ploy. And when I say a whole bunch of Titans, I mean way too many Titans.
Yes.
Because Dorn does this, and then Dorn starts reinforcing it. And he does this because he believes Horus and Petarabo will do something stupid. They could go around the system to invade Sol. But Dorn knew that Petarabo would want to test himself against Dorn before the invasion of Sol. And so Dorn just overloads this planet with defenses and Titans. And because he does that, Horus has to do the same. In the ensuing conflict...
Or he could have just blown up the ships and drove away. But continue. Yeah. But we wouldn't have Pacific Rim happening on a massive Pacific scale.
No. This is the Somme, is what this is. But it's Titans. The casualties at Beta Garmon are larger than the prior 5 years of the entire Horus Heresy combined. And the Titan battle is referred to as Titan Death, because the amount of Titans that die here, it never recovers. Which, by the way, Dorn was totally okay with. In fact, he wanted this more than anything. Sanguinius was also there. Again, like Khan Jagadike. Again, he hasn't come up recently. We'll find out. We'll see what happens. They were also both there. But the reason that matters is modern 40K. When we get to modern 40K, there actually aren't that many Titans. This is why. So we get the end of the heresy. There are Titans at the Siege of Terra, and we will cover that when we go through the End of Death novels. But post-heresy, Titans are hard to make. We've lost a lot of STCs. We've lost a lot of Forge Worlds. We've lost a lot of stuff. We actually, in the year 41,000, or at least we're almost at 42,000.
We are at 42,000.
We are 42,000. The Imperium is less capable than it was in the year 30,000. So these Titans, some of them just can't be made anymore. At the same time, the Imperium is also a little less inclined to make them, because they saw what happens when Titans turn on themselves. So we went from what was potentially tens of thousands of Titans to barely hundreds at this stage. It's hard to get actual numbers on it, but Titans are a lot smaller in number now. Now, they're still good. And this is one Titan can swing an entire battle if we're
campaign, calling a spade probably.
Here. Yeah, exactly. And the Imperium needs to have Titans because the traitors still have a few. But this is why in modern 40K, we don't really see a lot of them. Although there are some funny Tau story. Because I have to do this aside. There is a story about the Tau learning about Titans from one of the traitors who's like, I want to join the greater good. And they go, that's just stupid. No one would make anything that big. What, you're out of your mind. And then a Titan appears in one of their battles and just wrecks all their storm surges. And they go, oh, the Imperium's weird. But this is also, the reason I bring this up, I wanted to kind of touch on that battle is that is why in modern 40K, we really don't see them very much. If you read the stories, a lot of the more modern novels, you don't hear a lot of Titans. Even when we covered the Siege of Vrax, there were some Titans that were involved in Vrax, but it actually wasn't that many. Whereas if you read some of the Horus Heresy novels, it'll be like, oh yeah, they deployed like 100 Titans to do a battle. Siege of Vrax were like a dozen, not even.
Yeah.
That's why. So, by the way, that's that. That's Titans. With that though, I think we nailed it. Maybe, probably nailed not. It. I'm sure I'll get complaints. That's fine. But next week, we're going to take a little bit of a break and move into something, another big fan request, the 10th first and only. We haven't covered Guard in a long time. And I've actually, since we covered Guard, I actually played Guard, I think, for a full year and didn't talk about them, which felt weird. So I want to talk about Guard some more. And this is a great way to do it because those novels are awesome.
True story.
Heads up, if you haven't read the novels, we're going to spoil it. Some
really
of
badly.
Yeah. I was starting to write the show notes and I'm like, well, if you haven't read these, I'm kind of going to ruin them. So sorry in advance, but also if you, you know,
go,
they've been out.
Go for read a while, them,
guys.
They're good.
Yeah, they've been out for like a decade. So
it's more, I think.
Yeah. So just calling that one out. But until then, John Barsotti, Brad Chester.
This guy.
See you guys then.